earth, and sky.
For me personally, there's a great joy in biological diversity. There's a great joy in being able to go places and find new things. And in letting these species go extinct, we remove the ability of, you know, my daughter's generation to be able to experience that same kind of joy in as many places.
You're listening to biologist Rob Dunn, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dunn studies the interactions of small species like parasites, a vast but little-known section of life. He said that a wave of co-extinctions among these dependent creatures could constitute a major loss of biodiversity. Dunn spoke with Earth Sky's Lindsay Patterson.
Dr. Dunn, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. So, can you tell me, what is co-extinction, and does it differ from the extinctions that most people are familiar with?
Co-extinction is the extinction of one species when a species it depends on goes extinct. And co-endangerment, a related term, is the endangerment of a species because of a species that it depends on is endangered. And co-extinction is related to the other forms of extinction, but it differs in that all the other forms of extinction, all the other drivers of extinction, affect species individually, and co-extinction is the only one that sort of captures the interactions among species.
Is co-extinction going on today?
Yeah, so we're aware of some examples of co-extinction, and simply put, most of what we know about the relationship between parasites and their hosts or mutualists and their partners suggests that co-extinction should be at least as common as host extinction, extinction of the things we think about more often, the warm, cuddly, big-eyed things, if not much, much more common.
Can you give me an example of one of those species that's involved in co-extinction or co-endangerment?
Sure. So the only species that's listed on the IUCN list as co-endangered is the pygmy hog-sucking louse. And so the pygmy hog-sucking louse is this teeny tiny louse that lives on a teeny tiny pig. And it's known from nowhere else besides that pig. And so the rarity of the pig, which is due to human actions, has caused the rarity of the louse. And so the louse is endangered because the hog is endangered. And in fact, if we look at all of these hosts globally, we predict that there may be tens or even hundreds of thousands of species that are co-endangered globally.
In general, what is the reason for co-extinction and how does it work if you were to apply a theory to it?
Whatever factor causes the host to be initially rare. And so that might be habitat loss or invasion or overhunting or climate change. And then that's coupled with the relationship between that host or partner and another species. And so it's the specificity of that other species that leads the initial extinction to have broader impacts. If they can figure out a way to get onto some other host or to use some other partner, then they get to stick around. Otherwise, they ride the ship down into oblivion.
So why are these small parasite species important? Parasite usually has a negative connotation around it. So why do we need them to stick around? Why are they so important?
Well, I have my own personal reason, which as a biologist and a natural historian, I just kind of like them. You know, to me, the pygmy hog sucking louse is a pretty charismatic and fascinating critter. But I know that doesn't market well more generally. And so the truth is that these parasites have all the same values that their hosts might have. And so they have ecological value. There are good studies now suggesting that ecosystem health, in different ways that we might evaluate that, suffers when parasite diversity goes down. They have potential economic values. So there might be medicinal treatments that come ultimately from parasites that we haven't considered yet. For example, nematodes are now being used clinically to treat Crohn's disease, something we wouldn't have even thought about a dozen years ago. And then parasites have values that their hosts don't necessarily have. So, for example, parasites evolve much more quickly than do their hosts because of shorter generation times and larger population densities in some cases. And so they can actually be more useful historians, if you will, in the sense that they record host history. And some of the best data we have to date on human evolutionary history come not from human genes, but from the genes of our parasites. Essentially, the only way we could be wrong on these models is if the parasites are much more flexible than we think they are. Maybe they evolve more quickly or they're more tolerant of alternative hosts. But if we're totally wrong, then you have tens or hundreds of thousands of parasite species now looking for a new home. And if I were a parasite looking for a new home, well, where would I look? Well, I'd look to humans, an incredibly abundant species. I'd look to our domestic animals. I'd look to our crops. And so on both ends of the spectrum, you have a problem. Either we have hundreds of thousands of species at risk of extinction, or at the opposite extreme, we have these species that are potentially deadly looking for new hosts. And so somewhere in between those two is the reality. And we're so relatively naive about this process still that we don't know where it is. And so I would say that the greatest value in thinking about the conservation of these parasites, or just better understanding these processes, is that ignoring them could have incredible consequences for our public health, for our crops, for our economies.
Why do we need to understand how extinction in general as a process, how it works?
One option as a society would be to just wait until the extinctions happen and deal with their consequences when they occur. But that takes from us all possibility of mitigating those consequences.
So kind of going along with that, what do you think the human role in extinction is?
If you look at extinctions over the last 15,000 years, which I would say is the time period over which humans started to have big impacts on environments, or 20,000 years, that rate of extinction was tenfold greater than over the million years that preceded that. If we look at the extinction rates over the last 100 years, they're tenfold greater in rate than extinctions over that 15,000-year interval. If we look at extinctions over the last 10 years, they're tenfold greater again. And that change in rate is entirely due to humans. And so what we're witnessing now doesn't have recent precedent. In essence, we have this story of the history of the Earth as told through life that's all around us, this great library of life. And we're burning books more rapidly than we ever have before without looking first to see what the books are.
I'm going to ask you a kind of broad and personal question, but how does the potential loss of these small species and the prospect of the world living without these, how does it change the way that you think about the Earth and our place on it?
For me personally, there's a great joy in biological diversity. There's a great joy in being able to go places and find new things. And in letting these species go extinct, we remove the ability of, you know, my daughter's generation to be able to experience that same kind of joy in as many places.
You've been listening to Rob Dunn, Assistant Professor of Biology at North Carolina State University and author of the book Every Living Thing. To subscribe to this and other free science podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Jorge Salazar. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.